Though his bullets tore off skin and left streaks of bleeding muscle, not one of the creatures dropped. Wax ducked back into the room, holstering Vindication, and set his lantern on an outcropping.
Their skulls have been thickened.
He reached for his Starion. The Chondra stepped past him, both lithe and powerful. As the first creature entered, Tensoon smashed it on the side of the head, pinning it to the wall with one hand. Then he stepped back and raised his foot to crush the skull against the rocks. The others leaped over Tensoon, dragging him down, biting his flesh. He grabbed at one, ripping it free by the hind legs and hurling it away. Wax aimed for the eyes.
They have been created to fight you.
Tensoon wrestled with one of the creatures while others tore at him.
Flee! Your modern weapons are useless here, Lawman.
Like hell they are.
Wax dropped his Starion and reached to the large holster on his thigh, bringing out his short-barreled shotgun. He pulled out a handful of shells and tossed them to the floor. Then he waded in, slapping the first monster that came at him across the face with the shotgun. It flinched, then bared rows of uneven teeth. Wax shoved the shotgun into its mouth. Bits of it colored the wall as it fell. The one creature's death caught the attention of the others, who turned from the bleeding Tensoon and charged Wax. Wax swung his shotgun at the face of one beast and pushed on the barrel, giving the swing incredible momentum. The blow flung the creature to the side as Wax spun and pumped his gun, then aimed at the leg of the next one. The blast sent it face first into the stone. He leaped over the next one that came for him, pushing on a fallen bullet for lift. The shotgun slug hit the beast's back, stunning it. Then Wax multiplied his weight and landed on its throat. He shot it in the head, then pushed on the slug. His weight still increased, draining his metal mind at a furious rate. That bullet didn't stop at the skull as the others had. It split bone and made a mess of the brain. Wax then swung his shotgun upward into the head of the last beast coming for him. It flipped backward, exposing the belly. Wax emptied the shotgun. The underbelly was soft, as he'd hoped. The thing went down. Nearby, Tensoon rolled over, the wounds to his arms and sides resealing. He had killed another of the things by ripping it in half. His eyes were wide as he regarded Wax. His bloodied face looked as inhuman as those of the creatures they'd just fought. Tensoon climbed to his feet, surveying the wreckage. The lantern still burned calmly, illuminating bones scattered across the floor and masses that had once, horribly, been human. Wax felt sick. He'd called them things in his head, but these had been people. Tensoon was right. What Bleeder had done here was worse, somehow, than even her murders.
I will need to ask Harmony if I have failed him in killing this day.
Why would he care? He uses me to kill all the time.
You are his ruin. I am his preservation.
Wax stood in silence amid the dead and lowered his shotgun, trying to suppress the immediate feeling of indignation he felt. Was that all that he was to Harmony? A killer? A destroyer? Tensoon picked his way through the room.
Still, I do not think Harmony will mind what I have done. These poor souls.
He knelt and prodded at one of the bodies Wax had killed. Tensoon came up with a thin piece of metal, silvery and perhaps as long as a finger. Did it have a red cast to it, or was that just the blood? He used steel sight and found that while he could see the spike, the line was duller than it should have been. Hemallergy.
One spike. Any more and Harmony might have been able to control these beasts. How could such a change be affected by a single spike? This is a level of hemallergy beyond my understanding, Lawman.
Wax shook his head, checking on the creatures. Not to see if they were still a threat, but to make sure he didn't leave one of them here to die a protracted death. He found one woman still alive, paralyzed by his shot into her back. She watched him with those eyes, shaped like a person's, yet alien and dark. Whatever else had happened to these people, they should have been able to keep their eyes. Wax put his gun to the woman's eye. He closed his eyes and offered, what, a prayer to Harmony? Harmony hadn't helped these people.
Tell me you'll see these people buried.
More come. Do we fight here or run?
Can you get us out?
Perhaps. Not by a conventional method, but there could be a way.
Then let's go. This is another distraction, Tensoon. Those creatures only came for us when we left the other chamber.
Tensoon nodded, dropping his body to the floor and absorbing the wolfhound's bones again. Only seconds passed before he'd restored himself, save for the hair. That started to sprout from the skin as Tensun moved to the door, coming in waves as the Khandra's body arranged it and pushed it out. Wax grabbed his lantern and they fled, Tensun again leading the way.
There he goes, boys! I saw that dirty Connor right ahead! You go that way, I'll head around the other way, and we'll trap him between us, we will!
The small force of men with him, armed with wrenches and brooms, split off in a massive spit and vengeance. Wayne jogged backwards in the other direction. Eventually, he slowed, finally alone, and shook his head. Not bad fellows, for all the fact that they had the combined wits of a brick. Wayne spun a dueling cane in his fingers, rounding back through an alleyway and popping out near the governor's mansion. He didn't go toward the front. More and more angry people were gathering there, and some might recognize him from before. On his head, he wore a newsboy's cap, his other hat carefully stowed in a bush along the way. That was fine. He liked this new cap well enough, but he felt naked in another way. He was out of bend alloy, completely dry. That was bad. No more stopping time unless Wax had an extra vial for him. The fellow often carried one. Wayne slipped around the mansion, intending to head toward the back doors, where he hoped the guards would let him in. He'd wasted time, far too much, getting away from that crowd. The sight of that poor Khandra melting in front of everyone else haunted him. Rusts. He wasn't sure which side of the argument he came down on, but at least he wasn't going around melting people for an audience. Besides, for the moment, he figured he'd choose the side that wasn't actively trying to kill him. The howls were distant from Wax, but they haunted him more than they had during the first chase, for now he knew what made them. If he survived this, he would have to see something done for these creatures. Tensun conducted them through the intestines of the homeland, eventually reaching a wall full of cracks. Wax raised his lantern, inspecting it. The wolfhound beside him had a pelt that was missing hair in patches.
Well, we have been watching this spot. It cracked long ago, and the cracks seem to have widened over the years. If it opens, it will provide another path into the homeland. And we wish to be aware of each of those.
Wax ran his fingers along the cracks in the stone wall. Air moved through them, catching a whiff of something more rotten. More like the city he knew. Familiar and disgusting all at once. He increased his weight, then threw his shoulder against the wall. This was tricky, as his strength hadn't increased except in its ability to lift his own limbs and manipulate his heavier muscles. That lent him some ability, but mostly he had to try to force things just right so that he was falling into the wall as much as pushing on it. He finally got the correct leverage and shoved through the cracked rock. He was able to pick his way through into a narrow rift, like a very thin slot canyon out in the roughs. The walls were slick with water and knobby as in so much of this underground realm.
What now? Now we climb, human.
Tensun melted again, dumping his bones and fur to the ground, becoming a group of muscles. Here, in these narrow confines, that was an advantage. Tensun was able to push on both walls and start sliding up the crack, filling holes and clefts with his mass, then using his muscles to propel himself upward. A bag, like a stomach, had formed around the wolfhound bones, and he carted these up behind him. It was grotesque, yet fascinating. This was the natural state of the Khandra, a sludge-like collection of muscles that at times acted human. Wax started to climb.
Of course. What am I but a pile of blood and meat that gets up and walks around?
This climb was difficult, particularly with the lantern, though decreasing his weight substantially helped. After only a short time, he heard the creatures below, but they didn't seem to have much luck climbing. He continued to inch upward until, in his haste for a handhold, he fumbled with the lantern and dropped it. The light went out. In that moment, Wax realized he was buried in the earth, clinging to rocks in the darkness. The walls seemed to press against him, and twisted monsters howled below and sought his blood. Then his eyes adjusted, and a soft blue light revealed the world to him. He wasn't trapped. There was a way out above. He could see it by the patina of blue fungus growing on the walls, giving a gentle light to everything.
Harmony made sure it spread here. He wanted to make certain that no person was ever trapped in darkness in this place again.
Wax forced himself to continue upward. He recognized where he was now from the stories. The holes in the walls that he used as handholds had once been overgrown with crystals, and within, geodes containing a bead of the lost metal, legendary Atium. He was climbing the pits of Hathsin themselves.
Peace, Loman. Keep climbing.
Wax steadied himself and continued. This place was no longer a prison. No more did it cut and lacerate as it had done to the survivor's arms. The climb was actually easy with all those holes. Finally, he crawled from the crevice into a section of man-made tunnel, one of the city sewers. The crack behind him was just a thin cleft in the rock that gave no hint of its ancient origin. Wax shivered, breathing in the awful stench of the sewers, but still glad to be free. Tensun convulsed as a mass nearby, then formed into a wolfhound again.
I can see why Paul might want me distracted and unable to stop my people from being caught in her trap. But what happened below, that was not from me, but you, human. What was she trying to distract you from?
Wax could think of only one reason. Once she dealt with the Chandra, her plan would be ready for the final steps. She'd need to drive the people of the city further into a frenzy, freeing them, as she saw it, sending them forth as a mob to rage and hate, destroying Elendil. The governor was planning to speak to the people of the city. Bleeder hadn't succeeded in killing him yet, and Wax suspected he knew why. Because when she murdered him, she wanted an audience. Mist seemed to burn in the night like clouds before the sun. Wax landed on the steps of the governor's mansion, surprising the guards there. Constables by the uniforms rather than the normal guards. Good. They'd been running low on the latter. Wax stood up straight, turning and regarding the crowd gathering in front of the mansion. Constables with rifles made an uneasy barrier between them and the building. Nearby, workers erected a small stage on the steps. Aradel supervised, though judging from his sour expression, he was rather displeased with the governor's plan. Wax agreed. Addressing the crowd would be playing right into Bleeder's hands. He grabbed one of the constables.
I assume there hasn't been another attempt on the governor's life?
No, sir. He's in his study, sir.
Wax nodded and barged into the mansion, trailing wisps of mist behind him. He stalked toward the back, and in the hallway, Marisi intercepted him, taking him by the arm.
Kolas blood.
Nighttime summer. You need to do something about that crowd, Marisi. They're going to rip this city down.
We're working on it. Have you seen Wayne?
No. Why?
Melan said he went out to inspect the protesters. That was over half an hour ago. Nobody has seen him since.
All right. He'll turn up. I need to talk to the governor.
Marisi nodded, but held on to his arm.
Wax, he's corrupt. Really corrupt. I've found proof.
Let's survive this night. Then we'll do something about that.
My thoughts are similar, but I think Bleeder wants to put us in a difficult position. Perhaps she wants to force us to let the governor die.
Not gonna happen. We'll hand him over to the courts, but not a mob. Have you checked on your sister?
No, but I've been intending to.
Do so. I'll look in on your father after I talk to the governor. I don't want either showing up as an unexpected hostage.
As long as it isn't me, for a change. Melan is wearing the body of the guard with the sling. She's furious the governor won't let her or the others in. I'm going to go see if I can track down Wayne. Wouldn't be surprised to find him on the front row of the mob.
She let go of his arm and headed toward the exit.
Marisi, the uniform. It suits you. Don't know if I've had a chance to mention that.
She blushed. She was Marisi, after all, before continuing. Wax turned and strode down the hallway toward the door to the governor's study. Melan lounged there with a group of three other guards.
Nobody is to enter, lawman. He's been in there composing a speech for the last hour. He won't.
Wax walked past them and tried the door, which was locked. He increased his weight and flung the door open with allomancy. Innate stood inside, holding a pad of paper. He spun on Wax, then relaxed visibly.
You could have knocked.
And you could have ignored a knock.
Wax walked in and swung the door shut behind him.
What do you think you're doing, Innate? You could have been killed in here, quietly, alone, without anyone to help.
And what would they have done?
Innate tossed his pad onto the desk and walked over to Wax.
Wind's whisper.
Drunken stream.
Latest passphrases exchanged, Wax relaxed a little.
Locking your guards out was foolhardy. They would have fought for you, protected you. We chased her off one time before.
You chased her off.
Innate walked back to his desk and picked up his pad.
The rest were useless. Even poor Drim.
He started pacing, reading the lines of his speech. Wax fumed, feeling dismissed. This was the man they struggled to protect? Wax made his way to the window. It was open, surprisingly, letting in wisps of mist. They didn't travel far. He'd heard legends of the mists filling rooms, but that rarely happened. He leaned against the window, looking out at the darkness.
Listen now, peasants. I feel your pain.
Innate speech would just make things worse.
She wants that. She wants to free the city from harmony by making it angry.
She knew what Innate was going to say. Of course she knew. She'd been leading them around this entire time. Every clue Wax had found so far had been carefully planted for him. So, what did he do? Stop Innate speech? What if that was what she wanted? Wax started tapping his fingernail on the windowsill. He looked down, then blinked. A wad of chewed gum had been stuck there. Wax lifted his finger and, as he contemplated it, something started to fall into place. Something he'd been missing. Bleeder had set this all up from the start. Wax's suspicions had begun because she'd deliberately alerted him by wearing Bloody Tan's face. That had been a conscious ploy on her part, a way to start the festivities. Everything was moving on her timetable. Bleeder had had everything already in place when this night arrived. She'd been planning this for a long time, far longer than he'd assumed. So where was the best place to hide?
Rusts.
Wax reached for his gun and turned. He found himself facing down Governor Innate, who had taken out a sidearm and leveled it.
Damn it, Wax. Just a few minutes more and I'd have had this. You see too far. You can always see a little too far.
Wax froze there, hand on his gun. He met the governor's eyes.
You knew the passphrase, but of course you did. I gave it to you.
When did you kill him? How long has this city been ruled by an imposter?
Long enough.
The governor wasn't your target. You think bigger than that. I should have seen. But Drim, he was in the safe room when you entered below. Is that why you killed him? No. He'd have known you were gone.
He knew all along. He was mine. But tonight, I killed him because of you, Wax. You'd shot me up.
You had on the governor's clothing underneath the cloak. Rusts! I bloodied you. So you needed an excuse for why the governor was covered in blood. An excuse to pull off your shirt and stanch a wound.
Bleeder held the gun on him, immobile. The weapon didn't register to his allomancy. Aluminum. She was prepared, of course. But she seemed torn. She didn't want to kill him. She'd never wanted to kill him, for some reason.
Help!
As he'd suspected, Bleeder didn't shoot at him as the guards burst into the room. Wax fired at Bleeder to distract her as he dug in his gun belt for the last needle that Melan had given him. The guards turned their guns toward Wax. He threw himself toward the governor's desk for cover.
Idiot! Of course they'd do that!
Wait! The governor has been taken!
Bleeder gunned down the guards.
I guess the rest of the constables will be upon us soon. I'm not free yet. Neither are you, despite how I've tried.
Wax peeked up over the desk, then ducked down again as she swung the gun toward him. The governor's face was twisted in a mask of anger and frustration.
Why couldn't you have given me a little longer? So close! Now I have to kill you, claim you were the conjurer, and blame you for shooting my guards. That way I can still talk to the crowd. Free them!
Yet she didn't come for him. She still seemed upset. Best to take advantage of that.
Melan, go!
Wax pushed on the nails in the floor, flinging himself up into the air. One of the corpses at Bleeder's feet grabbed her around the legs. Wax pushed off the wall, leaping toward Bleeder.
Oh!
She slapped his hand as he landed, knocking the needle free.
Rusts, she's strong.
Bleeder kicked Melan off as Wax dove for the fallen needle. Bleeder became a blur. As he tried to grab the needle, she snatched it and spun around, slamming it down into Melan's shoulder. Then she lurched to a stop. She seemed jarred by the motion. Her metal mine storage, at long last, had run dry. Wax pulled out his gun and aimed, lying with his back on the floor. The bullets ripped her skin, but did nothing else. Nearby, Melan's shape distorted, face drooping and the skin going transparent. Wax lay on the ground, his empty gun pointed at Bleeder, whose skin reformed from the wounds. They stared at one another for an extended moment before boots in the hallway outside made Bleeder dash for the window. Wax grabbed his other gun, about to follow, but stopped himself as bullets started hitting the wall outside. He waited a moment, then glanced up, but didn't spot her in the swirling mists.
Damn!
Wax rolled his arm in its socket. That bullet hole he'd taken earlier in the night was bleeding again, and the pain was returning. He thought he'd chewed enough painkiller to keep it away.
You all right?
He noticed that Melan had managed to sit up, though her face was half melted.
Yeah, I made them do this to me once to test it out. I'll be fine in a few minutes.
Thanks for the save.
Wax scanned the room for hidden compartments with his steel sight. Quivering lines in the closet. Could he be so lucky? He rushed over. Wayne, tied securely and gagged, tumbled out and hit the floor. He was alive, thank Harmony. Wax knelt down and loosened the gag. Wayne looked like he'd been stabbed in the leg, and his metal mines had been stripped away so he couldn't heal, but he was alive.
Wax, it's the governor. Bleeder's the governor.
I know. You're lucky. She probably wanted to harvest your metalborn abilities with spikes, otherwise she'd have killed you right off. Why didn't you warn anyone?
Was going to, but I needed to check first. Got too close to the window, and she rushed and came right out for me. Had knocked me upside the head, stripped off my metal mines, and had me over her shoulder all in an eye blink. Drug me up here after, real quiet-like. You get her?
No, she ran off.
And you ain't chasing her down?
Had to check on you first.
I'm fine. Stop untying me and look in my pocket.
Wax felt at Wayne's pocket, pulling out a small pouch.
From Renette.
Wax removed a single bullet cartridge. He held it up as a tense set of constables, led by Marcy, piled into the room. Wax left them to interrogate Wayne, instead seeking the mists once more. Wax was a bullet in the night, rushing through the mists and disturbing them with his passing. He had become the hunter rather than the game, though the transition might have taken too long. He soared upward first to get a view of the area. An ever-growing crowd surrounded the governor's mansion. Would he bring down Bleeder only to find her victorious in a city destroyed? He couldn't worry about that at the moment. Instead, he sought signs, clues, a story. Nobody passed, even at night, without leaving a trail. Perhaps it would be too faint for him to locate, but it would exist. There, a group of people pulling away from the mansion instead of crowding toward it. Wax landed in a storm, mist coat flaring. This was the mansion's garden, near a large worker's shed. Wax studied the pattern of people moving away.
The gunfire just a moment ago. It wasn't to shoot someone, but to clear the crowd.
Bleeder was out of ferrochemical speed and fleeing frantically, and had opened fire into the air to clear this pocket of people. Wax loaded Vindication with the single bullet Renette had sent, placing it in one of the special chambers he could quickly spin to at will. Then he inched open the door to the shed, crouching beside the doorway so as not to present a profile. The mists were bright with torchlight this night, but that light didn't penetrate to the dark shed. Wax searched through the shadows until he saw something. A bone? Yes, and draped over it, cloth. He picked out a fallen cravat, a white buttoning shirt, the governor's clothing. Bleeder had stashed another body in here, and had fled to swap into it. How fast was she? Melan had said that Bleeder could change faster than she could, but that nobody was as quick as Tensoon. That didn't tell him much. Melan had taken minutes, Tensoon seconds. Wax held Vindication beside his head and slipped through the doorway. If he could find Bleeder in mid-transformation...
I can still free you. Perhaps I've lost the city, but I didn't come here for them. Not at first. I came for you.
Why me?
Wax searched furiously through the darkness, palms sweating as he held Vindication.
Damn it, creature! Why me?
I have deafened him. I have cut out his tongue, pierced his eyes, but still he can act. You are his hands, Waxillium Latrian. He may be deaf, blind, and mute, but still with you he can move his pawns.
I'm my own man, Bleeder.
Wax finally spotted what he thought was her silhouette, crouched at the back of the dusty chamber beside a rack of shovels.
Perhaps I serve Harmony, but I do so because I wish it.
Do you know, Wax, how long he cultivated you? How long he teased you, led you by the nose? How he sent you to be hardened by the roughs so he could draw you back in once you had aged properly, like leather being cured?
When the side of the building burst outward, Wax raised Vindication to draw a bead on her but didn't fire, and Bleeder ducked out. He had to be very careful with this shot. Renette had sent but one bullet, and only it would matter in this fight. Bleeder fled into the night and launched into the air, The breaking wall had been an indication, but this was confirmation. Her metal mind, drained of the speed she'd stored up, was now useless. She'd left it on the ground beside the governor's bones and had become a coin shot instead. Wax followed, pushing on the same nail, sending himself into the sky. He could see why she'd chosen to become a coin shot. Steel pushing lent great maneuverability and speed, and logically gave her the best chance of escaping. There was a problem with that, of course. Steel was his domain. The pile of bones on the floor of the little shack proved that at least one person was having a worse night than Wayne was. He nudged the pile with his toe, then grimaced at his wounded leg. Rusting inconvenient, that was. He had to grab the wall for support. He looked toward Marcy.
I can't decide if the governor already being dead means we did a really terrible job or a really good one.
Marcy knelt beside the corpse.
How could you see this as anything other than terrible?
Well, see, we weren't the ones what was in charge of keeping him alive when he died. Guess any time I find a corpse and it ain't my fault they're dead, I feel a little relieved.
Milan strolled into the cottage, still wearing the body of the guardswoman.
It's getting rough out there. We'll want to get back into the mansion soon.
Marcy continued to kneel by the bones, which were lit by Wayne's lantern. His wrists still chafed from his confinement, and his legs smarted something fierce. Rusting Chandra. She'd known just how to take him out. A quick burst of speed, tie his legs together, gag him, steal his metal mines, even though it didn't matter none how quickly he could heal if he was tied up. Of course, she should have checked his hands for gum as she towed him into the room.
The governor is dead.
Yeah, having your skeleton removed tends to do that to a guy.
What does it mean?
Marcy looked out the side of the shack in the direction they'd seen Wax escape.
Well, it means he won't be making it to his tap dancing lessons.
Wayne.
Yeah?
Shut it.
Yes, ma'am.
Marcy closed her eyes, and Wayne leaned back against the wall, looking out at that crowd, waiting for the governor to give them his speech. The speech that was supposed to stop all this.
Bleeder was planning to outrage them. I heard some of his speech. Maybe we can make them disperse.
No, we can do better than that.
Marcy turned to Milan, then nudged the governor's skull with her foot.
How long will it take you to imitate him?
Well, I didn't digest his corpse. And don't wince like that. It's not my fault you people happen to be edible. If it helps, you taste terrible, even if you're properly aged. Anyway, it'll be tough. Tensoon's pretty good at recreating a face from a skull, but I'm way less practiced.
Wayne stood still, jaw clenched.
You have us to help you get it right. Plus, it will be dark. You won't need to fool Innate's mother, just a crowd of angry citizens, most of whom haven't seen him up close.
Milan folded her arms, inspecting the remains.
Fine. If you think you can come up with something for me to say that'll placate that crowd, I'll do it.
Marcy looked at Wayne, then frowned.
What's wrong, Wayne?
He sat down, shaking his head.
Wayne? I didn't mean to snap at you. It's just that...
I don't mind what you said.
Then what?
Well, I'd always just assumed, you know, that humans tasted wonderful.
Nope.
You're really wounding my self-esteem. Maybe I'm different. Wanna gnaw on my arm a bit? It'll grow right back, at least once we find out what that monster did with my metal mines.
Milan, work on those bones. I need to rewrite your speech.
Bleeder had obviously practiced with steel. She knew how to push on passing latches or lampposts to adjust her course. She knew how to drop low before pushing on a parked motor car to give herself lateral speed, rather than just pushing herself higher. She was capable. Wax was more than capable. He followed as a shadow, never more than a half leap behind her. He sensed an increasingly frantic quality to her motions, flared steel trying to push herself out of his reach. He let her, at first, trying to run her out of steel. They bounced through the city, two currents in the mist, leaping over roadways clogged with angry rioters, past middle-class neighborhoods full of closed shutters and extinguished lights, over the grounds of the rich, whose security forces stood tensely by gates, waiting for this hellish night to end. Wax confirmed to himself as they flew that Bleeder had not been the marksman. She'd worn one of his masks earlier, and seemed to be doing so again from the quick glance he got as she passed a burning building in the night. But she did so to consternate and confuse him. Marks had sought the insides of rooms as he ran, trying to set up an ambush. She kept to the open spaces, as if frightened of the indoors. No running towards skyscrapers, no seeking the cramped confines of the slums. Instead, she headed directly east from the governor's mansion toward the freedom of the outer city. There wouldn't be nearly so much metal out there, making it difficult for her to flee, but also removing some of his advantage. He couldn't let that happen. As they chased past the late train, Wax redoubled his efforts. He anticipated her turn as she cut away from the train toward an industrial quarter, and he cut sideways, earning a few seconds. As she leaped over a squat, burning building, Wax skimmed between it and the building beside it, coming around the other side in a precise turn. He passed through boiling smoke and emerged, gun out, as she came down from a more graceful arc. She flung herself down a street, using each passing light as another source to push off, increasing her speed. It was done with deftness, but Wax had an advantage. He decreased his weight, filling his metal mind. As always, though the change was sometimes subtle, this increased his velocity. If he decreased his weight while in motion, he got a little burst of speed. He didn't know why. In a chase such as this, shoving off each light that passed, little advantages like that added up. Each cut corner, each careful judge of an arc, each use of the speed boost in flight after landing for a moment sent him closer to her. To the point that as they neared the edge of the city, she glanced backward and found him about to grab her heels. She shoved herself to the side, passing out over the river, and managed to land on the roadway portion of the East Bridge, holding on to one of the support wires. Wax landed gracefully before her, gun out.
You can't run from me, Bleeder. Let me remove your spike and take you prisoner. Perhaps the others can find a way, someday, to heal your madness.
And become a slave again. Would you clasp the manacles willingly on your own hands?
If I had done the horrible things that you have, then yes, I would demand to be taken in.
And what of the god you serve? When will Harmony accept his punishments? The people he lets die. The people he makes die.
Wax raised his gun, but Bleeder launched herself upward. Wax trailed her with his weapon, but she bounced back and forth between massive bridge support beams, and he did not fire. Instead, he lifted himself with a push, soaring up until he reached the top of one of the bridge's suspension towers. Bleeder waited here, atop the pinnacle, dressed in her red shirt and trousers, a loose cape blowing around her. Wax landed and leveled the gun. Bleeder dropped the mask. She wore Lessie's face. Marcy didn't tell the other constables, even Aradel, the truth about Innate. What would she have said? Sorry, but the man we've been protecting was actually the killer? Oh, and the city has been run by an insane Chandra for who knows how long? She'd make a report soon, once she knew how to explain it. But for now, she didn't have time. She needed to save the city. She still felt a stab of guilt as she stood near the flimsy stage at the front of the steps where she watched Captain Aradel pass her. The Lord High Constable looked visibly sick as he paced. The predicament she'd placed him in, with regard to thinking the governor was a crook, troubled him deeply. Nearby, Melan stepped onto the stage to address the crowd. Though she critiqued her own shortcomings, in Marcy's estimation, her imitation of the governor was excellent. Marcy frowned. Had Aradel's men prompted the crowd somehow? No. The constables stood in a tight line between the crowd and the mansion, but weren't doing anything to quell the crowd. How odd. The former rioters genuinely wanted to hear what the governor had to say. Well, why shouldn't they? Marcy felt their mood, one of hostile curiosity. She felt a calmness, too. Melan's speech would work. Everything was fine. Why had she been so worried earlier? It... Rusts. She was being soothed. She snapped alert, suddenly tense. She knew crowds. She'd studied mob dynamics. It was her specialty. And she could tell easily that something was wrong here. But who was soothing?
Suit.
Waxillium had said the Set was involved. His uncle had access to Allomancers and an inclination to see that Bleeder's plans came to fruition. It didn't matter what Marcy had written for Melan to say. When Suit's men discovered the governor was deviating from the script, they'd drive the crowd to a frenzy. Suddenly frantic, Marcy didn't listen to the beginning of Melan's speech. Could she get to Aradel? No, he was standing on the rusting stage near Melan. Wayne, putting on a brave face despite his wound, hovered near the two of them, ready to help if something went wrong. Marcy had to move quickly and quietly, not alerting the Set. She spotted Reddy standing near the base of the steps, watching the crowd with arms folded. Marcy scrambled over to him and seized his arm.
Reddy, there's a soother in this crowd somewhere.
What? Hmm?
A soother, dampening our emotions. Probably a rioter waiting, too, to drive the crowd into a frenzy once they hear the speech.
Don't be silly. Everything is fine, Lieutenant.
Reddy, how do you feel?
Fine.
Not annoyed at me? Not angry that I hold the position you should? Not jealous at all?
He glared at her, then cocked his head.
Damn it, you're right. Usually I hate you, but all I feel is a mild dislike. Someone's playing with my emotions. No offense.
Can't feel offense. I'm having trouble feeling any strong emotion or urgency. But Reddy, we have to stop them.
I'll get a squad. How will we find them, though? They could be anywhere.
No.
Marcy scanned the crowd. Her eyes found a carriage parked discreetly in a small alleyway across from the governor's square.
Not anywhere. They won't want to mix with the masses that they're planning to turn into a murderous mob. Too dangerous. Come on.
Lassie.
His vision shook.
It's not her. It's not her.
Again with the guns. You lean on them too much, Wax. You're a coin shot. How often do I have to point that out?
You dug up her corpse? You monster! You dug up her corpse?
I wish I hadn't been forced to do this. But strong emotion frees us from him, Wax. It's the only way.
Les... No, it was Bleeder who stared down that gun. Of course she would. She was a Chandra. He had to remind himself of that forcibly. The gun meant nothing to her. Lessie. How often had he dreamed of hearing that voice again? He'd wept for the wish to tell her one last time of his love, to explain the hole gaping like the wound from a shotgun blast left in him by her death, to apologize.
Harmony, I can't shoot her again.
Bleeder had outthought him after all.
I worried about using Tan's body.
Lessie stepped toward him.
Worried it would make you figure out who I really was.
You're not Lessie.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I was never Lessie. Always put on the Chandra. But I wanted to be Lessie. Does that count for anything?
Rusts. She had Lessie's mannerisms down exactly. Melan had said that she was good, but this was so real, so believable. He found himself lowering his gun, wishing.
Harmony?
But he didn't have his earring in. Marcy and Reddy wrapped around, moving over a block before coming back in behind the suspicious carriage. They hadn't been able to gather as large a force as she'd wanted. Not only did they worry about the soother noticing the motion, Reddy was concerned about leaving too few people watching the crowd. Marcy and her team of 11 men set up near the far end of the alleyway containing the carriage. How long before the set noticed they'd been had? Probably not long. Marcy had left in some of the beginning part of the speech in order to not sound too different from Innate, but the speech would take a turn very soon. Reddy pulled off his constable's helmet, Marcy's own pressed against her hair, an uncomfortable weight, then nodded to the rest of them in the darkness. With his aluminum-lined helmet off, he could feel the soother's touch more powerfully here than he had out in the crowd. That carriage really was the source of it. He put the helmet back on. The precinct owned only a dozen of these, all donated by Waxillium. Reddy had just enough clout to requisition the task force that had them. He secured his helmet, then reached to his side, taking out a thick dueling cane like a long baton with a knob on the end. The others did the same. There would be no gunplay this close to a crowd of civilians.
We go in quickly and quietly. Hope to Harmony they don't have a coin shot with them. Keep your helmets on. I don't want that soother taking control of any of you.
Marcy cocked an eyebrow. Soothers couldn't control people, though many mistook that. It didn't help that the words of Founding spoke vaguely of Chandra and Kolos being controlled by allomancy. But Marcy now knew that was only possible for someone who bore hemallergic spikes.
Combs, stay at the back. You're not a field agent. I don't want you getting hurt or worse, messing this up.
As you wish.
On 10, the group of them surged into the misted alleyway. Marcy hung near the back, walking with hands clasped behind her. Almost immediately after entering the alleyway, the constables pulled to a stop. A force of men in dark clothing piled out of a doorway inside the alley, blocking off access to the little carriage. Marcy's heart pounded as the two groups regarded one another. At least this proved she'd been right about the carriage. The two groups stood waiting, tense, before Reddy waved his dueling cane. The two forces crashed into one another. Bleeder stepped closer to Wax in the mists. Atop this high platform, this tower on the bridge, nothing else seemed to exist. It was as if they stood on a tiny steel island rising from the sea. Gray all around, darkness extending into vastness above.
Maybe I should have come to you and had you help me with my plan. But he was watching. He's always watching. I'm glad you took the earring out. At least my words meant something to you.
Stop. Please.
Stop what?
Lessie was mere inches from him now.
Stop walking. Stop talking. Stop loving you. My life would have been a lot easier if I'd been able to do that.
Wax seized her with his open hand, grabbing her by the neck, thumb along her jaw. She met his eyes, and he saw pity in them.
Perhaps the reason I didn't come to you had no connection to Harmony at all. I knew this would hurt you. I'm sorry.
No.
I'm going to have to do something about you. Keep you safe somehow, but out of the way. Might have to hurt you, Wax. For your own good.
No, this isn't real.
Still don't know what to do about Wayne. Couldn't bring myself to kill him, poor fool. He followed you here to help you in the city. For that, I love him. But he's still Harmony's. And so he's probably better dead than the way he is now.
No!
Wax shoved her back, lifting Vindication again. The gun, however, leaped from his fingers, pushed by Bleeder. It tumbled into the mists. Wax rammed his shoulder into Bleeder, trying to toss her off the tower. She seized him as he hit, throwing them both off balance. As they fell together, she raised her aluminum gun and aimed at his leg. They fell from the tower, dropping through the mists. A frantic push on the bridge below slowed Wax, but when he hit, his leg gave out and he dropped to one knee.
Gun! Find the gun!
It had fallen this way. Rusts. Would it even work after dropping so far? He hadn't heard it hit. Did that mean it had plunged into the waters? Bleeder landed hard nearby. She spun on him, lit now by the garish electric lights that lined the roadway of the bridge. It was empty of carriages and motor cars, and behind her, a greater light hovered over the city. Red, violent light, seeming to burn the mists. Looking out of the city, he saw darkness and peace. But inward, Ellendale burned. Marisie edged along the outside of a battlefield. It was a very small battlefield, true, but the ferocity of the conflict stunned her. She felt she could, for the first time, imagine what it had been like to live during the War of Ash so long ago. But surely wars back then had been more thought out, more deliberate, not this mixed jumble of figures beating on one another. Watching it made her sick, anxious. Those men were her colleagues, struggling frantically to push through the Set's thugs. All night, they'd been forced to stand and watch the city decompose around them, the situation growing worse and worse as they felt helpless. This was something they could fight, so fight they did. Thankfully, the Set troops here didn't appear to include any coin shots or pewter arms. Her men were still outnumbered, and for all their determination, they weren't making much headway. Outside the alleyway, the crowd was growing restless. Marisie couldn't help feeling desperate as her men struggled and fell. She made her way along the side of the alley, hoping that if she got to that carriage, she could make a difference. Unfortunately, the alley's confines were too narrow, and combatants filled the entire thing. Already half her men were down. Those who fought looked like wraiths shifting and undulating in the mists, shadows trying to consume shadows. Nobody on either side seemed to pay her much attention. That was common. For most of her life, her father had wished she would vanish. Those in high society were very good at pretending she didn't exist. Even Waxillium seemed to forget she was along sometimes.
Well, so be it.
She strode directly into the fight. As she neared two struggling men, she dodged in as if trying to do something to help, then flung herself to the side as if she'd been hit. It was a fair impression, in her opinion. Nobody came to her rescue. They kept trying very assiduously to kill one another, and so Marisie crept along the ground, crawling in the shadows until she neared the carriage. Two guards stood here. Drat. She needed to get past them. How? She glanced back toward the fight. It had moved farther up the alley, the constables being forced to retreat before superior numbers. They were probably far enough away that Marisie could try something truly desperate. She used her allomancy. For a brief moment, she engaged a speed bubble that caught herself and just the two guards. She extinguished her metal immediately. Only seconds had passed outside. The two guards looked around. Marisi did her best impression of a corpse. Then she flicked on the allomancy again.
There's metal born among them.
Marisi gave them another jolt of distorted time. The two guards held a hushed, frantic argument. Then they knocked on the door of the carriage. Marisi waited, sweating, her nerves taut. Her men didn't have much time. The two guards ran down the alleyway, leaving the carriage and carrying orders to the other combatants to be wary of Metalborn. Marisi got to her feet and slipped around to the other side of the carriage, which had no driver. Then she slipped inside, seating herself. A pudgy woman sat on the bench within, wearing a lavish gown of 3 silken layers. A man beside her sat with a hand on her wrist, his eyes closed, his suit very stylish and modern. The handgun Marisi leveled at them was, on the other hand, quite traditional and quite functional. The woman blinked, breaking her concentration to regard Marisi with a look of horror. She nudged the man, who opened his eyes, startled. One soother and one rioter, Marisi would guess.
I have a theory that a gentlewoman should never need to resort to something so barbarous as violence to achieve her goals. Wouldn't you agree?
The two quickly nodded.
Yes, indeed. A true gentlewoman uses the threat of violence instead. So much more civilized. Stop those pewter heads in the alley from beating up my friends. Then we'll talk about what to do with this crowd.
Stop it, Wax! Stop obeying him!
There, vindication. He spotted the gun near Bleeder, peeking out of a gutter alongside the roadway. Wax leaped for it, rolling painfully on his wounded arm, using a push to skid forward. Bleeder leveled her gun at him, but didn't fire. Perhaps deep down, a part of the creature had adopted the feelings of the body it wore. Perhaps it no longer could tell the difference between its mind and its face. Wax snatched up vindication.
Please, listen.
You're wrong about me.
Wax spun the chamber, felt the trigger, and hoped the gun still worked. He looked up at Bleeder and leveled the weapon. Looking down those sights, he saw Lessie. His stomach turned again.
How am I wrong?
Rust, she was crying.
I'm not Harmony's hands. I'm his sword.
Bleeder didn't dodge. Why would she? Guns barely inconvenienced her. This shot took her right in the forehead. Though her head flinched at the impact, she didn't fall, barely even moved. She stared at him, a little dribble of blood running down beside the bridge of her nose onto her lips. Then her eyes widened. Her gun dropped from trembling fingers.
We're weaker than the other hemallergic creatures.
Wax struggled to his feet, holding onto the bridge's sidewall for support.
Only 2 spikes, and we can be taken.
No!
Bleeder fell to her knees.
No!
One spike allowed her to be sapient, and a second, delivered into her skull in the form of a bullet forged from Wax's earring, let Harmony seize control of her again. Marisi towed the female soother after her, holding the woman's collar with one hand, her gun in the other. They were accompanied by a battered Reddy, who regarded the surging crowd with displeasure. They'd left the other captives with the rest of the constables, and she prayed to Harmony that wasn't tempting fate.
Stop them!
They reached the edge of the crowd, which was throwing things at the stage. Poor Melan soldiered onward with the speech, growing more and more testy that they weren't listening.
I'm trying! It might be easier if you weren't choking me!
Reddy lifted his dueling cane.
Just soothe!
I can't control their minds, silly man! And beating on me won't accomplish anything! When do I get to speak to my solicitor? I've broken no laws! I was simply watching the proceedings with interest!
Marisi ignored Reddy and instead focused on the crowd. Melan stood before them, lit by electric lights from behind, but by bonfires from the front. The rage of the crowd, an ancient fire against the cold sterility of the new world.
You should be grateful. I've come to talk to you myself.
Wrong words.
I'm listening, but you have to listen back, miscreants.
She sounds just like him.
Too much, perhaps? Melan was playing a part. She was the governor, the role Marisi had given her. It seemed that the Chandra had let the form dictate her reactions. Rusts. It wasn't that she was doing a bad job. She was doing a good job of being innate. Unfortunately, Innate had always had trouble connecting with the crowds.
Fine, burn the city. See how you feel in the morning without homes to live in.
Marcy closed her eyes. Rusts, she was tired. How late was it now? The crowd was growing violent. Time to grab Melan and Wayne and leave. Their gambit had failed. It had been a long shot in the first place, perhaps impossible. Marcy opened her eyes. She stood at the south end of the crowd, near one of the bonfires, and was close enough to the front to make out Constable General Aradel, who had stepped up beside Melan. Likely, he was going to get the governor to safety. Instead, Aradel took out his pistol and pointed it at the governor. Marcy gaped for a moment. Then she spun on the soother.
Soothe them. Now, with everything you have. Do it, and I give you immunity for what you did tonight.
The woman eyed Marcy, displaying a craftiness that belied her earlier whining. She seemed to be weighing the offer.
I promise it, by the survivor's spear.
The woman nodded, and a wave went through the crowd.
Replar Innate, in the name of the people of this city and by the authority of my station as Lord High Constable, I arrest you for gross corruption, personal exploitation of this city's resources, and perjury of your oaths as a civil servant.
What idiocy.
Mayor, turn around.
Aradel looked down at his constables.
Turn around.
The feeble line of soldiers reluctantly turned to face him, putting their backs to the crowd.
What is he doing?
Something brilliant.
Aradel looked over the crowd, still holding a gun to the governor.
Tonight, the governor himself declared this city to be in a state of martial law. That puts the constables in charge, with him at the head. Fortunately, it turns out the governor is a lying bastard. He's no longer in control. Best I can figure, you're in control. So if you're willing, tonight, the constables stand with you. Now, you all came here to start a riot. Listen, stop your shots. I won't stand for rioting or looting. You start burning this city and I'll fight you up to my last breath. You hear me? We aren't a mob.
Then what are we?
We're the people of Ellendale, and we're tired of being led by a pack of rats. I have proof of at least 7 house lords who were corrupt. I mean to see them arrested. Tonight. I could use an army to help me, if you're willing.
Aradel shoved Melan into the hands of a pair of corporals waiting nearby. They seemed utterly stunned. In truth, Aradel himself seemed a little overwhelmed by what he'd just done.
Pure preservation. They're going to turn into a lynch mob.
No, they won't.
How can you be sure?
Because a river is easier to channel than to stop, Reddy.
This could work. She didn't have much hope for holding the house lords and ladies Aradel wanted to arrest, but the governor himself, with those letters and Melan playing the role, yes, this could really work. She released the soother.
You're free. Get out of here. And tell Suit he might want to take an extended vacation during what is coming.
Wax crossed the bridge limping. Life had taught him never to underestimate an enemy you thought you'd downed. One hand on his bleeding leg, he kept his gun trained on the writhing figure until he could sweep her gun away. Then he went down on his good knee and rolled her over, making certain she wasn't covering up another weapon. He found tears streaming from her eyes, mixing with the trickling blood from the bullet wound.
He's in my head again, Wax. Oh, ruin. He's in my head. He's taking me. I won't go back to him.
Hush.
Wax pulled a second gun from her side and tossed it away.
It's all right.
No.
She grabbed his arm.
No, it's not. I won't be his again. I will be me at the end.
Bleeder's body bucked as she held to his arm. He frowned as she kept her head thrust forward, meeting his eyes, weeping and shuddering, thrashing.
What are you doing?
Dying. We decided it. We won't fall again. We found a way out.
She could no longer meet his eyes, and she fell backward, spasming, eyes dilating quickly, skin trembling against the bone. Wax watched, horrified. He seized her arm. No pulse. She was dying. Killing herself. Could he stop it? Why would he care to? She was a murderer many times over. This was a fitting end. In truth, he empathized with her. Let her take this route, rather than suffering under Harmony's control. Hesitant, but feeling there was little else he could do for this poor creature, He picked her up and held her close. Let her die in someone's arms. It revolted him to do so after what she had done, but damn it, it was right. Bleeder turned her head toward him, and her expression softened as she shook, smiling through bloodied lips.
You're surprising as a dancing donkey, Mr. Cravat.
Where did you hear that? How did you know those words?
I think I loved you even on that day. Lawman for hire. So ridiculous, but so earnest. You didn't try to shelter me, but seemed so eager to impress. Lord with a purpose.
Who told you of that day, Bleeder? Who?
Ask Harmony. Ask him, Wax. Ask him why he sent a Chondra to watch over you all those years ago. Ask him if he knew I would come to love you.
No.
He moved us even then. I refused. I wouldn't manipulate you into returning to Elendil. You loved it out there. I wouldn't bring you back to become his pawn.
Lessie?
Harmony, it was her. It was her.
Ask him. Wax. Ask him. Why? If he knows everything, he'd let you kill me.
Lessie?
Lessie!
She was gone. There, in his lap, he stared at her body. It kept its shape, her shape. He clutched her. He still knelt there, holding the body an hour later when a figure loped out of the mists and approached on four legs. Tensun the Chondra, guardian of the Ascendant Warrior, approached with a reverent step. Wolfhound's head bowed. Wax stared into those shifting mists, holding a corpse, hoping irrationally that his heat would keep it warm.
Tell me. Tell me, Chondra.
She was sent to you long ago.
Tensun sat back on his haunches.
The woman you knew as Lessie was always one of us.
No.
Harmony worried about you in the roughs, Lawman. He wanted you to have a bodyguard. Pa'alm had exhibited a willingness to break prohibitions the rest of us held sacred. He hoped that you two would be good for one another.
You didn't tell me?
Wax's grip tightened. Hatred. He didn't think he had ever felt hatred so intense as he did at that moment.
I was forbidden. Milan didn't know. I was only informed a few days ago. Harmony foresaw a disaster if you were told whom you hunted.
And this isn't a disaster, Chondra?
Tensun turned away. They sat there on that empty bridge, electric lights making pockets in the mist, a dead woman in Wax's lap.
I killed her.
I killed her again.
Wax sat alone in a room full of people. They'd done everything to make him comfortable. A warm fire on the hearth, a small lamp on the table beside it, for Steris knew he preferred flame to electricity. Broadsheets lay untouched in a roll beside a cup of tea that had long since grown cold. They talked and celebrated, led by Lord Harms. A disaster averted. A new governor, the first ever who was not of noble blood. Even the Lord Mistborn, long ago, had been part nobleman. The last emperor had been full-blooded, and the survivor half-nobleman. All great people, everyone agreed, to be lauded. But Claude Aradel had none of the same lineage. Not a drop of noble blood in him. Those at the party congratulated one another for being so progressive as to speak favorably of one who was common-born. Wax stared into the fire, fingering at the stubble on his chin. He spoke when it was required of him, but mostly they allowed him his peace. He was wrung out, Steris told them, fatigued by the terrible things he'd seen. She diverted them from him when she could, telling them, when they inevitably asked, that she and he had decided to delay the wedding so Wax could take a short vacation to recuperate. Clotilde passed by, swapping his cold cup of tea out for a warm one. For all Wax cared, this comfortable chair could have been a hard bench. He didn't feel it, or the warmth of the fire, or the joy of the victory. How could you hear a bee buzzing in the middle of a thunderstorm? The guests eventually found excuses to leave, their sedate revels accomplished. Some bade farewell to him, others did not. About halfway through the protracted death of the party, Marcy settled down on his footstool. She wore her constable's uniform. Odd thing to do at a party, though as he thought about it, the men in the constabulary did it all the time. Marcy took his tea, then placed something else onto the table where the cup had been. Wax's eyes flicked toward it. A small spike, long as a finger, made of some silvery metal with dark red spots, like rusted bits.
That's one of the spikes she was using, Waxillium. Melon wanted me to show it to you.
Wax closed his eyes. They thought he wanted to see something like that?
Waxillium, we can't identify the metal. It's nothing we've ever seen before. It certainly wasn't one of the spikes she started with. That means she removed both and stuck one like this in instead. Where did she get them? Who gave them to her?
I don't care.
Wax.
He sent her to me, Marcy. He sent a Chandra to seduce me.
No, he sent a bodyguard to watch over you in the roughs. I spoke to Tensoon. The seduction was her idea, and yours, presumably.
Harmony knew. He saw what would happen.
Maybe he didn't.
Then what kind of god is he? What good is a god like him, Marcy? Tell me that.
Marcy fidgeted, then took the strange spike back. She dropped something else onto the table as she rose. A small earring, just a stud with the back bent over.
They sent this for you.
Wax didn't look at it. He left that earring right where it was, as Marcy made her farewells and stepped out of the party. Others came to him, offered bland encouragement of the type you might write on a card. He nodded, but didn't listen. Marcy stopped by the precinct offices on her way home from the party at Ladrian Mansion, intent on retrieving her copy of the Lord Mistborn's Hemalurgy book, which she'd locked in her drawer. The offices were dark and quiet, a direct contrast to the chaos of a few nights back. Though some constables were out on patrol, most had been given time off. Only those with jail watch would be on duty. So it surprised her when she found lights on at the back of the main chamber. She walked up and leaned against the doorframe, looking at Aradel, who had a stack of papers out and was working on them by candlelight.
I find it hard to believe that there's nothing better for the governor to do on his first day in office than equipment depreciation reports. Not that I mind. You've been ignoring those for how long?
I'm not governor. Not really.
The title interim governor has the word governor in it, sir.
They'll vote someone else into office next month at the proper hearing.
Frankly, sir, I doubt that.
He set one page down on the stack, signed and sealed, then sat there staring at it. Finally, he ran a hand through his hair.
Oh, preservation. What have I done? And why the hell didn't any of you stop me?
You didn't exactly give us a chance, sir.
I'll run away. I'll refuse the appointment. I can't be happy in this position, Combs.
The ones who are happy in the role, sir, seem to have had their chance. I'm excited to see where it goes from here. You just changed the world.
Didn't mean to.
Doesn't matter.
Marcy glanced to the side as someone else moved through the darkened chamber, approaching. Another constable coming in to catch up on work?
Oh, no.
Governor Innate stepped up to the door, holding a belt.
Either of you know how to tie one of these?
You don't tie a belt, Chandra. You buckle it.
No. I mean in making a noose. People always talk about guys hanging themselves in their cells, but I'll be damned if I can figure it out. I hung there for a good 10 minutes, and I'm pretty sure it wouldn't have killed even the most frail mortal. I've got it wrong somehow.
Melon looked up at the two of them, then frowned at their appalled expressions.
What?
Hang yourself? You're our linchpin witness.
You really think that Harmony would let me sit at trial and testify falsely against people I don't even know? It would make a mockery of justice, kids.
No, we have the letters. We know the truth.
Do you? You know for certain Pa'alm didn't forge those letters, or that Innate himself didn't do it before she took him? You know that those lords and ladies went through with the plans rather than backing out? You know they weren't just talking about possibilities?
We've got good cases, Holy Immortal. Lieutenant Combs has done her research. We're pretty sure this is all correct.
Then convince the judge and jury. We don't do things like this. People have to be able to trust the law. I'm a lot of things, but I'm not going to be the one who sets the precedence that the Chondra can lie in order to get someone convicted, even if you're pretty sure you've got the right evidence.
Marisi folded her arms, grinding her teeth. Auradel glanced at her, questioning.
Without her, they'll wiggle out of it. We won't be able to keep them in jail. They'll be loose upon the city again. But, blast. She's probably right, sir. I'd have hit on it if I'd thought about it long enough. We can't falsify evidence, however right our cause.
We weren't going to keep them in prison anyway, Combs. They have too much power, even now. They'd find a way to escape conviction, pinning the charges on subordinates. They'll have the governor's seat again unless someone does something about it. Damn it. I really have to do this, don't I?
Sorry, sir.
Well, at least I can get my desk clear of paperwork first. Suggestions for my replacement as Constable General?
Ready?
He hates you.
Doesn't make him a bad Connor, sir. So long as someone keeps an eye on him, as you put it. I can do that. I think he'll rise to the challenge.
Auradel nodded, then held up a hand to Melan. She tossed him the belt, and he tied it in a loop.
This part around your neck, Holy One. Make your skin bruise so it looks right, a V-shape. You know how to make someone look like they died of strangling?
Yeah, unfortunately.
I'll come cut you down in 15 minutes. You'll need to fool the coroner.
No problem. I can breathe through a tracheal system instead of lungs. Arrange to have the body cremated, give me a window, and I'll slip out and leave the bones, which you can burn. Nice and neat.
Fine.
Auradel tossed back the belt, and Melan wandered back toward the cells. Marisi joined her after giving Auradel a salute he didn't see.
How did you get out, anyway?
Stuck my finger in the lock and melted my skin, shoving a bit in. It's amazing what you can do when you aren't constrained to normal body shapes.
They walked together to the entrance of the jail part of the building. Marisi wasn't going to ask how Melan had avoided the guards. Hopefully the two hadn't been hurt. Melan lingered at the door.
Harmony knows, right? If these people are guilty or not.
He does.
So you could simply ask him if it's just to imprison them. If he says yes, we could go through with it. I'd accept God's word on the matter to satisfy my conscience.
Still breaks our rules, and Harmony probably wouldn't talk.
Why not? You realize what all this has done to Waxillium, right?
He'll weather it.
He shouldn't have to.
And what would you have Harmony do, woman? Give us all the answers? Lead us by the noses, like Pa'alm swore that he did? Turn us all into pieces on a board for his amusement?
Marisi stepped back.
Or maybe you want it the other way. Leave us alone completely, not intervene at all?
No,
Can you imagine what it must be like? Knowing that any action you take is going to help some but hurt others? Save a man's life now, let him spread a disease that kills a child later in his life. Harmony does the best he can, the best possible by the very definition. Yes, he hurt Wax, he hurt him badly. But he put the pain where he knew it could be born.
Marisi blushed, then, annoyed at herself, dug in her purse and brought out the strange spike.
And this?
It's not a metal we know.
That's what Tensoon said, but Harmony...
It's not a metal Harmony knows.
Then... it's not his? Not from his form? Like the old stories of Atium and Laracium?
No, it's from somewhere else. She used these strange spikes to steal attributes instead of the ones we're familiar with. Maybe that's why she could use stolen alimency in Ferrochemy when other Chondra can't. Either way, didn't you wonder why Harmony couldn't see Bleeder? Couldn't track her, couldn't predict her? What could stop a god, Marisi Combs? Any guesses?
Another god.
Congratulations.
Melan pulled open the door.
You found proof of something that terrifies us. Think on that for a while before you go around accusing Harmony or the Chondra of anything. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm going to go try to hang myself properly.
Another god. Not Harmony. Not ruin. Not preservation.
She looked down at the small spike in her hands and heard a name from a year ago, spoken by Miles Hundredlives as he died. The name of a god from the old days. Marisi had researched the name half-heartedly, far more distracted by her interaction with Iron Eyes. Now, however, she determined to dig back into the records and find the answers. Who or what was Trell? The room had probably grown silent long before Wax noticed he was alone. The fire was dying. He should do something about that. He didn't. Steris stepped over and set a new log on, then stirred the embers. So, he hadn't been alone. She set the poker beside the fireplace, then regarded him. He awaited her words. None came. Instead, she scooted the footstool around until it was beside his chair. She sat down, legs crossed neatly, hands in her lap. The two of them remained there, not saying a word, though she did eventually rest her hand on top of his. The fire had felt cold to him, the air frozen, but that hand was warm. Finally, he turned to the side and rested his head on her shoulder. Mistborn Shadows of Self is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2015 by Brandon Sanderson, all rights reserved. Published by arrangement with Tom Doherty Associates, LLC, Dragonsteel Entertainment, LLC, care of Jabberwocky Literary Agency, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2016, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Unauthorized download and or duplication is prohibited. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Chris Gennebach, Bradley Smith, Danny Stoller, Tracy Oliveira, Yasmin Toison, Bob Payne, Eva Wilhelm, Richard Rowan, David Harris, Michael John Casey, Lily Beacon, Bruce Allen Rauscher, Chris Davenport, David Jordan, Eric Messner, Laura C. Harris, Thomas Keegan, Robbie Gay, Matthew Keenan, Maggie Donnelly, Rebecca Shear, Jonathan Foyer, Nanette Savard, Kimberly Gilbert, Michael Glenn, Casey Platt, Rose Elizabeth Supan, Mort Shelby, Nick DePinto, Lise Bruno, Christopher Sheeran, Gregory Waddell, Evan Casey, Patrick Busink, James Lewis, Colleen Delaney, Ken Jackson, Eric Singdalson, James Konacek, Tim Carlin, Christopher Walker, Scott Graham, Dylan Lynch, Tony Nam, Scott McCormick, and Thomas Penny. Adapted for Graphic Audio and directed by Nathaniel Perry. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Nathaniel Perry. The Mistborn theme was composed by Thomas Hogan. If you enjoyed Mistborn Shadows of Self, be sure to look for the Spellsinger series by Alan Dean Foster, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloads and podcasts.
If you can't find that Graphic Audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can select from over 900 titles and 60 series in either CD or high-quality download formats. If you would like to listen to an entire series, you can conveniently purchase the whole sets on CD or USB flash drive from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can now earn loyalty rewards points, redeemable toward future online purchases. You can also get full mobile downloads directly to your phone or tablet with our new Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices, so you can listen on the go, anytime, anywhere. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our email newsletter, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter.